is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
Hello, this is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, August 8th, filling in again for Buster Olney. I'm Keith Law. And coming up on today's show, I'll be speaking with Eric Carabel of the Fantasy Focus podcast and Joe Sheehan. A couple of quick headlines for this Thursday morning. As you've probably seen, unless you slept through it last night, the Orioles' Chris Davis and his massive contract got into an altercation in the middle of last night's game with manager Brandon Hyde. We don't really know any of the details. They didn't discuss. Brandon Hyde said afterwards, we're going to keep it in-house. It's private, which is, by the way, exactly the way you should handle something like that. I would imagine this is going to go very poorly for Davis, especially given his non-productive season, his second non-productive season in a row for the Orioles. The Brewers' Christian Yelich says he's day-to-day with a back injury. Obviously, he's the incumbent NL MVP and very much in the running for that again. Milwaukee certainly depending on him, his offensive output as they try to chase at least a wild card spot this season. And the Yankees' Gleyber Torres is avoiding an IL stint despite a core injury. He actually went to the hospital on Sunday to be treated for the core issue. Looked like he was fine, but he was removed once again from Tuesday's game with continued pain there. They're not really sure exactly what the injury is, but it sounds like he may miss another day or two as they wait for some test results. And now let's lead off with our first guest, Eric Carabel. Well, once again, I'm getting the band back together. My old partner in crime, Eric Carabel. Eric, welcome.
How are you, sir? Always good to talk.
I'm good, and you?
Excellent. It's we're knee deep into baseball season, and I can't.
That wasn't an accidental slip, was it?
Not really, but it's all good, man. It's all good.
So the first thing I have to ask is like your Phillies fandom temperature check right now. Like what is your, misery index? Yeah.
No, I'm older and more mature now. There's no misery index. maybe 20 years ago when I was five. No, I don't think they're that good of a team, frankly, but I don't think any of the wild card teams in the National League are all that good, if that makes sense. I mean, I just don't see a whole lot here. I don't see any of these teams challenging the Dodgers or really the Braves. I mean, Washington has that three-man rotation that they could do damage with and Anthony Rendon. But to me, when I look at the Phillies and the Mets and the Brewers and the Cardinals and the Giants and the none of those, they're all so flawed, whether it's bullpen or lineup. You can blame Bryce Harper all you want. I think what's happening with the Mets now is really exciting for their fans. They're in this race. But they're also three games over 500. So the wild card has watered things down. It makes more teams interested as opposed to 1972 when maybe only four teams were in it. But, man, it's fascinating and kind of ugly at the same time, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, it's extremely ugly. I mean, the idea that there are all of the, this is me showing my age. I guess you also showing your age. I look at the standings and I see the Mets are 3 over .500. The Phillies and the Brewers are 4 over .500. Hell, the Reds are 4 games under .500 and their fans are saying, do we have a shot at the second wild card? It's, what? Wait, when did that become the bar for a team to make the playoffs? I know the answer to that, obviously. And I am totally old man yelling at cloud right here, but you were supposed to be well clear of 500 unless you were the Twins in 87. To start considering yourself a playoff team, right? I didn't make that up.
Of course, but I will say this. if you make it to that wild card game, yes, you technically can win the World Series, and we have seen that done. So if you are the Mets and their fans, and you're thinking, well, why do we even bother? Why did we kind of buy? This is why you do it, because DeGrom could beat Kershaw, or not Kershaw, DeGrom could beat Scherzer in the one-game playoff. And then maybe, you know, they have the starting pitching. Maybe they can beat the Dodgers. You want to get into that playoff thing. And I know a lot of people, including our friend Joe Sheehan, say it's just a one game playoff. It's not a playoff. It is a playoff to me because teams can win the World Series if they make it. And if they don't, they can't.
Yeah, I'm going to actually talk to Joe in a little while. Specifically, he wrote something good about the Mets run recently that I want to talk to him about. Yeah. Yes, actually.
Although it's all bad teams. They're beating just bad teams. The reason why the Phillies are in this predicament and not four games over in the wild card is they can't beat the Marlins. They couldn't beat the White Sox last weekend. It's their own fault that they're in this situation.
So what do you diagnose as the biggest problem with the Phillies? Because actually, it's funny because they come up a lot as I talk to people around the game, too, because the Phillies spent a lot of money. They had a good offseason, apparently.
Oh, yeah. Well, they did. They got a lot of talent in the offseason. I find two main problems here, and neither is Bryce Harper or the manager. One is you can't lose like 6 out of your 8 relief pitchers from opening day and expect to use double A guys and get away with it, or guys that have just been dumped by other teams. I mean, Blake Parker might be their top setup man right now. He was literally dumped by the Twins. That's the first problem, is the bullpen, other than Hector Neris, it's all hurt. David Robertson, for the first time, got hurt, and it's bad luck. The other thing, and I guess this is kind of on Harper, is their offensive players haven't stepped up. Harper, Realmuto, Hoskins, none of them are having great years. And as soon as they lost Andrew McCutchen, the offense fell apart. And McCutchen was getting on base, a lot of walks. Say what you want about clubhouse presence, but the point is, he was their leadoff guy, and he was leading the league in runs scored. When you lose a guy like that and you cannot replace him, and they haven't, that's the issue, is the offense doesn't step up. Last night they had 5 measly singles, and then also the bullpen is atrocious.
Right, but you sort of hinted at this. Who's going to get blamed for all of this?
Nobody.
I think there's one person that's going to get blamed.
Well,
now, whether
Kapler,
they fire him or not is a different story, but everyone's going to put this on Kapler. I think, which is not fair in this situation, for the reason he did not actively go out and injure the relievers himself. Then I would blame him for that.
People in Philadelphia think that Matt Klentak, the GM, should have prepared better for 6 of his 8 relievers being hurt.
Right.
And Andrew McCutchen and he did replace McCutchen reasonably. Dickerson and Bruce, they're not center field. No, neither is McCutchen. But I don't think Kapler loses his job over that, because there's a lot of things you can point to here. And also, they should finish over 500, and nor should Klentak lose his job. So I think next year is the key year for the Phillies. They have Harper for 13 years. Nobody said they were going to win the World Series in year one. They just have to win one in his tenure over 13 years to make the contract worth it. So I think they'll be a better team next year when they have a different bullpen.
Oh, I thought they were going to win it every year that they had Bryce Harper.
It doesn't work that way. No, amazingly.
Are you sure? I got to go read the contract again. I could have sworn I saw that in there.
You know what? There's a lot of teams in the National League with a lot of pressure. I mean, it's not really the Phillies to me. I mean, the Dodgers have to get to the World Series and win it. Right? I mean, because they've lost the last 2. Nationals, they haven't won a playoff series.
The Nationals need to win a playoff series.
Yeah,
to me is the biggest one. That's just it's a little ridiculous. But it's totally hanging over their heads at this point.
A lot of pressure on them. Yes.
I feel like that goes on, and I think Mike Rizzo's done a really good job, but that will always be the coda to any description of Mike Rizzo's time with the Nationals. But they didn't win a playoff series. He put together really good teams, and the playoffs are a little bit, they're not quite a crapshoot, but they're pretty close. And they've lost several times to very good teams. They've lost a couple times to teams that ended up going to the World Series, so how much can you really blame them for that? But yes, that becomes the narrative.
They find ways to lose in the playoffs. And, if they win the wild card, and they could still win the division. 6 games behind the Braves is not a lot. I just think the Braves
are going to play each other.
Yeah. But the thing is, if Strasburg pitches poorly in that 5-game playoff, I mean, that's going to reflect on him because of what's happened to him in the past. And, Corbin, they gave all the money to. It's like their Bryce Harper. He has to do well in the playoffs. And that's assuming they even make it, which they may not. So there's pressure on the Cubs, because who knows where Joe Maddon is in a year, and that team, could be getting old,
Agreed.
So I think there's a lot of pressure on these National League clubs, whereas in the American League, there really isn't. Yeah, the Yankees and the Astros. I mean, if the Yankees lose to the Astros in the playoffs, who's going to fault them for that? Especially the way they've gotten through this season. And the Astros just won a couple years ago, and now they have the best big 3. Twins, there's no pressure. Indians, no pressure. So to me, all the pressure is on all these National League teams.
I do look at the American League as, well, there's a couple of really, really great teams. And even if you lose to the Twins in the playoffs, Twins are a really good team also.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
The AL playoff teams are, I think we have a pretty good guess, at least at this point, of who the 5 teams will be. I'm looking at the Fangraphs playoff odds, right? The Rays, of the top 5 teams, the Rays have the lowest playoff odds, and they're at 68%. Only the Red Sox, are they really the only team here with, oh no, I'm sorry, the A's
there's,
have
there's
31%.
There's one extra team there.
Yeah,
so either Tampa, Oakland. Yeah.
Yep.
And Minnesota versus Cleveland for the division is wide open. It's only 2 games now.
Fascinating. Yes, absolutely. Cleveland, and it's funny because I said the Twins were better than people realized, and I still picked Cleveland to win the division. Of course, and I spent the first half of the season saying, I should pick the Twins.
I did, actually. I was one
nice
of
call.
I might have been
nice.
The only person at ESPN who did pick the Twins, but now I don't think they're going to win the division. And it's because of their starting pitching. When you compare Cleveland starting pitching, and even guys like Zach Plesac or Aaron Civale, who are doing these things, It's just better than the Twins. Barrios got lit up the other day. Bullpen's a mess. It's just, I think Cleveland's going to catch them. And I hope the Twins make the wild card game, but even that's not really assured because Tampa still plays good baseball. Oakland's got enough pitching now. The Twins better hope they just make the wild card game at this point.
Yes. Well, the Twins, see, to me, the Twins in Cleveland also, they're at different points in their sort of trajectory where Cleveland was farther along in their build, you know, building towards contention. So they had the Savali, Plesac was a lower pick too. Bieber, for example, guys who were not elite prospects necessarily, certainly not when they were drafted, or I think all three are college guys, right? But they've all become quality major league starters. The Twins, before the regime change there a couple of years ago, had a kind of a dismal track record, especially up top with taking pitchers. They took a lot of guys who ended up relievers or a lot of guys who just didn't pan out at all. And so they don't have the starter depth. There's no Aaron Civale or Zach Plesac in that Twin system that they could reach down and grab and put on the major league roster. And I think that's the biggest difference now. And I don't blame them for not wanting to go trade the prospects they have for starting pitching. Cause they missed, if I'm Derek Falvey or Thad Levine, I'm looking at my system saying, no, we're going to be good for a while. Let's not squander this on our first season of contention.
Right. The Twins have built differently than the Phillies have, but I think that both teams can say this doesn't have to be their year. Twins right. should be good for a while is basically what you're saying there. They do have a lot of hitting prospects. Yep. And also, you know, some of the pitching prospects, we might see Brewster Grader all this season. Balazovic, right? He could be up early next year. He looks like maybe a number 2-3 starter. So at least they're starting pitchers now strike hitters out. For a decade, they just, you know, guys like Carlos Silva, who would never strike anybody out, and they were wondering why they, you know, why their BABIPs were high. Now, at least they're building something in the rotation. And the Twins and the Indians for the next, and the White Sox too, when they get Kopech back, that's going to be a fascinating AL Central for years to come.
Yes. The White Sox are really interesting because the system is not, has never been deep, but it's been top heavy for about three solid years now between couple of very productive trades, some top 10 or top 15 overall picks in the draft. I don't know if you saw, I finally saw Luis Robert. I shouldn't say finally. I saw him again the third time this year. I chased him all of last year, never saw the guy. He's now 0-14 when I'm in the ballpark.
You're bad luck, man. Either it rains or he's hurt or he just swings and misses. Please stop going to his games.
Oh,
he should be very good.
Actually, I should totally start like a Patreon, right? Pay me to not go watch Luis Robert play. I have to, I said on the podcast I was going to do this yesterday. I should look it up now. How many swings and misses he had in that game? I mean, this is a AAA game. This is a guy who's hitting about 350 on the season. And if I simply ignore, if I knew nothing, right? If I just walked into the park on, what night was that? Tuesday up in Scranton. To PNC Field. I should give them the plug. And knew absolutely nothing else. I'd be like, well, this guy can't hit. He looks good in the uniform, but he can't hit at all. And yet I really think he's hitting about 350 or so. He's got to be slugging 600 on the season across three different levels now. It's not like he's just doing it with the juice ball in AAA, but I bring him up also because he's one of those guys. If he's even close to the player they think he's going to be, if Moncada becomes close to the player they think he's going to be, and I think he's probably gotten there a lot of the way this year, I mean, they could have a pretty good front line, both in their rotation and in their lineup for several years, and then just probably have to kind of do what they tried to do this offseason. If they tried to spend on Machado and just end up getting outbid, at some point they're going to have to win that bidding and get one, maybe two more guys to finish out the major league roster, and they're going to be a 90-win team.
Yeah, it's a dark horse playoff team. Maybe not as soon as next year, but certainly soon. They should win more than they lose. It's the young starting pitching also when Kopech comes back. But Giolito has already been great. Lopez, we'll see. I think the White Sox are building something. You look at the American League, and there's all these bad teams, but like the Tigers and the Mariners and the Orioles, I don't see any hope anytime soon. It's going to be a really long time, not like 2 or 3 years, but like a really long time for those teams to come back. Whereas you can see with the White Sox and the Blue Jays with that offense and Pearson, maybe you can see where that team could be a 500 team next year.
Yeah, that Orioles team. I do think the system's improved this year. My God, that's going to be a long.
And it's getting worse. It got worse last night. And
how about that?
That's a shame. I don't know what it's like to be Chris Davis and bat 170 with a 40% strikeout rate. I'm sure he's frustrated. I'm sure everybody there is because of the money he makes. But what are you going to do if you're the Orioles? You have to play him. You can't, I mean, you know, sunk costs and all that. You can't eat the contract, but you also can't get into a potential fight with your manager. Why do these players and managers do this in public? Do this behind scenes. Like, don't let us see this. I mean, it's great that you did let us see it because we could talk about it, but how can you do that like in the dugout so we can see it? I just don't understand how stuff still happens.
I feel like at some point they're going to have to eat the contract. I mean, what's the money spent, right?
Well, it's not like, you know, eating
it
a year.
It goes for 10 more years, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And that forever. Ownership doesn't want to do that. I mean, you know that. So, but like, do they have to play him? I don't know. Maybe a suspension coming? I mean, like, you can't just do that in public. So, like, a bad season is getting even worse. You can say what's happening in Detroit is really embarrassing. They lose almost literally every day. But they're not embarrassing themselves, you know, like, off the field. Like, there's nothing else happening there. But like Baltimore, that's embarrassing.
Yes. Oh, Chris Davis, after this season, has 3 years and $69 million left on his contract.
Seems like a lot to just nice. Gloss over.
No,
it
is. But like you said, you can't play him. My thought all along, I swear I may have said this on Baltimore radio in the offseason, eventually they're going to need the roster spot. There will be somebody where they're going to need his at-bats in the lineup or they're just going to need the roster spot. And that's when you just cut bait. Because I think at this point we're past any hope of them extracting any value from him whatsoever. He's just a body on the roster.
I just don't know who on their offense is really a keeper. I mean, nice seasons for Trey Mancini and Renato Nunez and VR, I guess. But, like, there's nobody on that offense where I look and say, that's part of a building plan. Whereas with the nope. White Sox, you can see that, certainly on Toronto. I don't see anybody on Baltimore as I look to their pitching as well that – John Means is nice, I guess, all-star, but like, come on. He's
well,
yeah, not.
Well, because somebody has to.
Somebody had to be.
He's had a nice season.
Yeah, he's overachieved.
Mancini would have been a better all-star, actually, just because, plus he's a more track record. I mean, I always kind of feel that way about all-stars. That's a whole separate conversation.
Well, you have nice 2 good months. In there. You know, 2 good months gets you beat an all-star.
That's all it takes, right?
Yeah, it's kind of a, you know, that's an adventure there. But yeah, Baltimore, I just don't see a whole lot of hope. And then just everybody get along, okay? At least, you know, go about your business professionally. Be professionals here. And I don't know whose fault it was, to be honest. It could have been the manager's fault. I don't know.
Right. No, we don't actually know what happened. Well, we want to blame Chris Davis because he's a bad player, and therefore he was probably at fault.
Yeah, but we all would have taken that money. So let's start there, okay?
Oh,
yes.
For sure.
Anybody in the world would take that money to do that, and it's a shame that he hasn't been able to play well because he had a couple years there where he was a lot of fun to watch. He was hitting homers before the happy fun baseball, and, you know, it was okay, but now it's not okay.
Yeah, no, it is. None of this is okay. But, and by the way, among the clubs you mentioned, you said Tigers, Orioles, Mariners. How about the Marlins, where – I think they're starting to build something for the first time in forever because I've never ranked that farm system highly as long as I've been at ESPN. The major league team still stinks, but they're actually they're accumulating some prospects now. I look at that system and think, all right, there are clubs worth going to see now. There's something to talk about. Granted, I get fewer Marlins questions than I probably do about any other club, but just from an academic point of view, they might get interesting now.
I think they're interesting now. I think they'll lose their 100 games this year, but I look at their prospects and I like the Jazz Chisholm trade because they got a guy with huge upside. They should be going for upside as opposed
yes,
to,
totally.
You know, Gallen pitched well against the Phillies last night for Arizona, but he's not going to be Shane Bieber either. When I talk about somebody who could go from, okay, he's okay to now he's an ace. How'd that happen? I don't think Gallen does that. You should be taking on guys with huge upsides, huge ceilings. Eventually, you can see them building around Jesus Sanchez, Chisholm, Eisan Diaz is already up in the majors, looks like a big power hitter. So, yes, I think what they're doing is the right thing. Obviously, a lot of bad publicity in the last few years, poor Jeter and all this. But they could be contenders soon, in like 2 years, I think, in the National League East.
Yeah, no,
And they're good young pitching. That's good young pitching. They're all mostly right-handed, potentially strikeout guys. Lopez, I like. Alcantara should be good. Yeah, they could be interesting.
Yeah, to me, it depends on how quickly the pitching in the system, because they do have some, again, for the first time, they have some pitching. They have your old friend Sixto Sanchez there.
Yeah,
looking kind of heavy, but stuff's still really good. Braxton Garrett is back, and what I've heard so far is he's looked very good. He was a 7th overall pick. He was top 10 overall pick a couple of years ago. I absolutely loved him. I thought, hey, this is a great delivery. It's super clean. It's going to work. And then like 10 innings into his pro career, he blew out his elbow.
Yeah, course, bad luck.
We know absolutely nothing about what gets guys hurt. But like he's looked good. Trevor Rogers has apparently looked decent the last the couple of months this year. It seems like his stuff might have ticked up a little bit. Like they're getting somewhere. They're just that's just a dogfight of a division where none of those clubs looks like they're going to be bad anytime soon.
Yeah, I would say that. I mean, Phillies and Braves are still ascending. Nationals are going to be 90 wins for a while. They could afford to lose Harper, and Mets have the pitching. So, yes, I agree. It's a tough division to emerge, but it should be a lot of fun in that division as well.
Yep. Last question for you before I let you go. Mm-hmm. I mean, as we're just sort of bouncing around the majors here, but I've said all along my favorite team since the start of the season, my favorite team just to watch, simply to watch certain, just to watch the players, since I have no rooting interest because I hate all teams equally.
I've heard.
It's been the Padres, but basically since day one, since they put Tatis on the roster, they put Paddock on the roster. Urias was on the roster. You sit down, back on the roster. So there are guys on that team where I will tune in just to watch them play, regardless of whether I think they're going to win, regardless of their place in the standings. Like if I'm sitting down, usually I watch on the iPad. If I'm sitting down to watch baseball any night, that's the team I tune in. What's your team for that?
Well, I agree. I mean, Fernando Tatis, to me, I think he could still win the National League Rookie of the Year, even if Alonso hits 48 home runs, because he could win a batting title, and he's stealing bases, and he's got power, and he's a shortstop, and he looks fantastic. He's so much fun to watch. I agree. San Diego is great. I love watching Chris Paddock pitch. Munoz in the bullpen throwing his 100. I mean, you have the pieces here to be a contender right away. I mean, Minnesota to me is a lot of fun because of the power and how everybody underrates Nelson Cruz, and Buxton in center field is a joy to watch. I just wish he would stay healthy. So I love watching the Twins play because you know there's going to be some power here and some good defense as well. So I guess my AL team to watch is the Twins. I don't think they're going to win the World Series or represent the AL, but they are a lot of fun to watch as well.
Yep, great choice. Eric Carabell is the co-host of the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. And, of course, he is my former partner in crime in the late and much lamented Baseball Today podcast.
Meow.
Yeah. Oh, yes. He's right. One of the bias cats is right here demanding my attention.
I've seen that. Heard that.
Eric,
yes.
Always good to catch up with you.
Have a great day.
Before I speak with Joe Sheehan, do you ever feel like ticketing websites make getting to the event difficult on purpose? It's as if they're so big they can get away with not caring about the customer experience. The real question is, how easy could it be if those ticketing sites actually cared? With millions of live event tickets and a price match guarantee, SeatGeek proves there's a better way. Search sports, live music, comedy, and more. SeatGeek has the tickets you're looking for all in one place. A quick look at the App Store shows over 50,000 five-star reviews. It's simply a better process because SeatGeek pulls together millions of tickets from all over the web. Then it rates each deal on a scale of 1 to 10, and SeatGeek displays them on an interactive seat map. Green dots mean good deals, red dots are overpriced. And every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets with confidence. Troy, I understand you've had some success with SeatGeek recently.
Yeah, so actually it's so funny that we bring this up today, because yesterday I was talking with a really good friend of mine, and she's actually going to a concert today, a John Bellion concert in Connecticut. I don't know if you're familiar with his work, Keith. But
I am not.
Okay. Well, he's a really good artist, and she's really amped to go to the concert. She was telling me about SeatGeek and how she just downloaded the app, and she saw, you know, she doesn't want to pay too much for her tickets. You know, she's pretty young, so she doesn't have that much disposable income. But so she wanted to find a really good seat for a really good price, and she went to SeatGeek, and she told me that it really worked for her, and she's really excited for the concert tonight. So thank you to SeatGeek for that.
SeatGeek will even give you $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. All you need to do is use our promo code. Download the SeatGeek app today and use promo code BUSTER for $10 off on your first purchase. That's promo code BUSTER for $10 off on your first purchase. And now it is my great pleasure to be joined by my very longtime friend, Joe Sheehan. Joe and I wrote together in the very early days of Baseball Prospectus. He now runs an absolutely essential email newsletter. You can sign up for that at joesheehan.com. Joe, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Keith. You know, the best description I ever got from you was partner in forks, which I loved. So
there you go. Yes, absolutely.
Over at the dish, you threw that up there.
Yes, yes. That absolutely works. And we have actually broken bread a few times. So I wanted to talk to you about a couple of things. Something you brought up in your newsletter the other day, which is what gave me the idea, hey, I should talk to Joe on the podcast this week, was cut your look at this run that the Mets have been on over the last month or so, and you sort of threw some cold water on it with evidence, as you usually do. So why do you hate the Mets? Explain to Mets fans why you hate their team.
Well, I mean, it's just you have to hate the Mets. I grew up 10 minutes from Yankee Stadium, so that bias just leaks into everything even 40 years later. No, I don't – you're seeing a lot of retconning, I think, of what happened to the Mets in July where, you know, they were going to sell and then they got hot and they decided not to sell. And I don't think they decided not to sell so much as they kind of stumbled into this plan where they traded for Stroman and then didn't trade Wheeler. And I just don't see a whole lot of plan being executed now. And that's actually the right decision. They've invested a lot in this season. The wildcard race is particularly weak. There is a real upgrade from Vargas to Stroman. I think them deciding to keep Wheeler, keep Syndergaard, actually is the right decision. I just want to make sure it's not seen as, you know, the Mets are suddenly, you know, the Dodgers or the Rays where they've got a really competent front office. I think they stumbled into this. You look at them on the field, and obviously this is a great run right now. It's largely come at the expense of the Pirates, Padres, White Sox, and Marlins. Stop me when I get to a good team. Padres are the best of that bunch, and they're under 500. You look forward, and starting tomorrow night, they're going to play 31 of the next 34 games against teams with winning records, the only exception being a three-game series against the Royals.
Right.
So now, take nothing against what they've done, but we're going to get a real test of this team over the next 5 weeks. So whether you think they're good, you think they're not good, we're going to have answers. And that's going to particularly start this weekend. This weekend series against the Nationals really gives the Nationals a chance to get some separation on the field. The Nationals, to me, are the best team in this wild card race. I think there's a pretty big gap between them and whether you consider the Cardinals or the Mets or the Phillies to be the next best team. So the Mets this weekend have a chance to either close that gap on wild card one or really define this race as the Nationals and everybody else.
Yep, that actually makes a ton of sense to me. And I look at this team, too, and I look at this Mets team. First of all, I agree with what you said, that it was probably – when I wrote up the Stroman trade, I'm trying to remember what you – I know you wrote about it, too. My immediate reaction was, this doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Aren't they sellers? Aren't they supposed to be sellers at this point? And then so the idea to go acquire Stroman, trading away two decent prospects from their system and acquire Stroman, who I think is very good. I think will be even better now that he's out of Toronto on a short window when you probably should be turning around, especially selling Zach Wheeler since he is a free agent at the end of the season. That to me didn't make sense. Now they ended up not trading anybody else. So at least that part of my analysis turned out to just not hold true because at least they were internally consistent. I just did not get the sense like you did that this was any part of a plan. Like it seemed like they were actively trying to trade Syndergaard at least until the night before the deadline. It seemed like they were actively trying to trade Wheeler up until pretty close to the deadline, just decided they didn't like what they were being offered.
Exactly. I don't think they traded for Stroman thinking we're going for it. I think there was a lot of talk in that moment of, you know, trading for Stroman, but trading away Syndergaard, which didn't make sense to me at all. I had a real problem with that because if you're a short-term team, if you're saying, we're not rebuilding, we just want to bounce back in 2020, there are very few assets in baseball that I'd rather have than Noah Syndergaard. Yes, he's been disappointing this year, but how many pitchers actually have a higher upside than Noah Syndergaard does?
No, he's, I think, like legitimately a Cy Young contender anytime he has a decent, healthy season. Just on size, stuff. He's not actually had a significant arm injury. I think the other couple of years ago when he missed some time, I think it was an oblique or a lat strain. I mean, I look at him as somebody who, frankly, who's it's hard to say he's had a disappointing career because he's certainly been productive. We just all expected more, right? Mm-hmm. That to me, at all points, I thought, hey, this guy should be one of the top five pitchers in the National League, and he really hasn't been that at this point. So hanging on to him for a variety of reasons does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I think that they've stumbled into a good plan. Now, we'll be very curious to see what happens this offseason because this is not an organization that's gone out and written big checks. Other than the Cespedes deal, they splashed around in the Deadpool of a free agency. That's how you end up with Jed Lowry and Todd Frazier. Will they be competitive for Cole? Will they be competitive for Rendon? Rendon would be an excellent fit for this team. I'm not sure he's somebody who's going to want to land with the Mets in New York, but we'll see what they do. Also, the Mets, too, you know, their listed payroll, their CBT payroll, and the money they're actually sending out are vastly different. They're right. not spending nearly as much money as it looks like they're spending.
And for listeners who don't understand that, give just a little more detail.
So, well, they're going to get insurance back. U.S. Cespedes makes $27 million a year, and they're going to get a chunk back on that. There could be a dispute with the insurance company because of this off-field injury, but they'll likely get a big chunk of that back. There was money there that they're committed to on David Wright that they're also getting back. So I don't have exactly how much in front of me, but it's a significant amount. It's like probably between the two of them, $30, $40 million they're getting back. So, and again, this gets to the entire thing about the Mets, where ever since, you talk about a decade now, where they just haven't really been run as a fully healthy baseball franchise. They've been run kind of as a crippled entity. And it's why it looks like they're spending money, but they're really not.
You've also been running your third previews, where you look at the look forward to the last third of the season and sort of run through all 30 teams, sort of where they've gotten to at this point, what you expect for them going forward. We can talk about any other teams you wanted. The one that really jumped out at me, actually, because I sort of had the same reaction, was Oakland, where your first line, you list Oakland A's 64-49, their run differential is plus 82. I appreciate that. I always put the run differential there, so I don't have to go look it up myself. Your first line, I scratch my head when I look at the A's record because they don't, quote-unquote, feel this good. And that is exactly the reaction that I had was, God, seems like they've been banged up, and you look at the roster and you think, oh, this is a good team. But I did not think they were this good of a team or a team that would have a run differential this high. Especially because if you told me at the start of the season that all of those young pitchers who've gotten hurt would get hurt or simply be non-contributors, they would have said, yeah, they're going to be maybe a little over 500, but they are very clear contenders at this point.
Even as recently as, I want to say at the end of May or early June, I answered a reader question and I ended up doing a big piece on the A's. And I said, mm-hmm. in 6 weeks, they could have Luzardo, they could have Cook, they could have Caprelli, and there's a fourth I'm blanking on. We didn't think Frankie Mania. We didn't think Frankie Montas was going to be suspended. They're right. down, even from a midseason projection, you know, maybe 250, 300 innings from that group of pitchers. And I thought they were going to be up, and they've gotten this continue to get decent work, not great work, but just decent work out of the Fires Anderson group. I mean, guys, pitchers who really, and that's a better class of pitchers than they were using last year. But yes. Still, it's really surprising when you see the effectiveness they've gotten. You think about them not having, you know, great years, but you know, Matt Chapman, when you're a defense first star, it doesn't feel, again, I talk about feel here, it doesn't feel like you're having a great year, but he's on his way to another, if not MVP, certainly down ballot vote season. You know, 125 OPS plus, still playing the great defense at third. And guys like Marcus Semien, Ramon Laureano, guys who are defense first players, were also having strong offensive seasons. And so that while there's no breakout name there, they're all good players. Now, the other problem is, like, guys I expected to kind of have good years haven't. I thought Profar was finally going to get it together. He's been terrible.
Yeah, me too.
Steven Piscotty's a player I really like. I like them trading for him. Obviously, there was a really good story about that. You know, them sending him home to where his mom was. He hasn't hit at all. The bullpen's been much worse than last year. If you look at the difference between this year's team and last year's team, it really comes down to Blake Treinen and Lee Trevino. Those guys are off by, you know, probably 30 runs at this point. And that's hurt them significantly. But they're right there with the Rays and the Indians in the wild card race. And again, it's how are they doing it? Well, they just have enough good players. I don't think it hold up just because I think they're going to need to get some better innings than they've gotten. Luzardo, I want to say, could pitch in September. AJ Cook, I think, might be up even within the week. I believe when Iowa shut down again. So, you know, we'll see what they get out of those pitchers. But it's really an unusual year. And again, you give credit to I'm not a manager guy, particularly because I tend to think we overrate the soft factors, but Bob Melvin has really done a fantastic job given the talent base that he has there.
Yeah, he's done it at multiple spots now. Remember, there was a period where he was handed a decent bullpen in Arizona and used those guys in what, especially at the time, was sort of a less conventional way and managed to get really productive seasons out of some guys who were not very productive after that. While he was there in Arizona, and ended up pushing them just helping them into a playoff spot. The one other team I wanted to discuss with you, of course, we have to talk the Yankees. that was your team growing up. That was actually my team growing up as well. And, you know, coming into the season, I looked at the Yankees, looked at the starting pitching staff and said, this may not be very good. Like, they're not going to be a bad team by any stretch, but I saw no starting pitching depth and enough red flags with potential injuries, both to starters and to some members of the offense. I thought they might stumble this year. Of course, the exact opposite has been true, mostly because they seem to pick up guys on waivers and turn them into borderline all-stars. I'm still not really sure what sort of pixie dust they're sprinkling on these guys, but it seems to keep happening over and over again. So give me your current diagnosis of the Yankees and how they've managed to be so good despite what would have been debilitating injuries to a lot of clubs.
And again, you go back to, you know, how much credit do you want to give the manager? And I think you've got to give Aaron Boone all kinds of credit. And the front office is picking the right guys. They're seeing guys whose skill sets they feel like they can play up. This is baseball right now, right? Take a scrub. Right. Apply your pixie dust. And we talk about the Astros with that. We talk about the Dodgers. But the Yankees have been right there in terms of taking these guys. And I don't know if there's a specific plan that they're doing the way we see it with the Astros or Dodgers, but the Yankees have had a lot of success with this. I will also say that, you know, at the start of the year, I flipped my pick right as the season was, you get to that point in March where you're making your picks. Yep. I had the Yankees all winter, but the Severino injury, I just didn't think they could overcome it.
Right.
I thought that missing 180 innings was going to be devastating to them, and it hasn't. They've got the best or second best record of baseball on a given day, and it really surprises me. And I look ahead to the playoffs and I think that's where they'll start to miss those innings. You look at Tanaka and Paxton, and both of those pitchers, like, they have that 12 strikeout and 7 inning upside. We've seen both of them do it at one time or another. But I wouldn't trust them necessarily in a short series or in a series of short series when you've got to go up against a team like the Astros, where I know Verlander, Cole, and Greinke are going to give me that most nights. So this is a great story. It has the feel of a story that ends in a 5-game, in a 4-1 loss to the Astros in the middle of October. And I feel like that's going to take away from the credit that Boone and Cashman should get for the assembly here. The rings mentality. I wrote about Mike Trout for Baseball America this week, and I've been hit with a bunch of people like, oh, let him see him win a playoff series. And I really react badly to that, because baseball should be about more than that. Baseball was about more than that until fairly recently. So if the Yankees go 104-58 under these circumstances and then lose a best-of-seven series to an Astros team that's just unbelievable, we tend to just immediately dismiss them, and I really think they're going to deserve more credit than that.
Yep, absolutely. And it will be interesting to watch them in September, too, where they might get Severino back, probably, you know, I assume, in a relief role. I don't know the current status on Betances offhand. D.V. Garcia, who I just saw the other night for the fourth time this season, he can help this club, and I don't know exactly how. He may be better suited to a multi-inning relief role just as a way to break him into the majors, even though I project him as a starter in the long run, but they do have some help coming. I don't know that helps them necessarily in October, but it will be interesting to see who they get back, how they deploy them, and do they sort of rejigger any of the pitching staff for an October series.
The issue there is that, I mean, if you're the Yankees, getting two relievers and a guy you have to use as a reliever is gilding the lily. I don't know. I mean, what are you going to start? Are you just going to go to bullpen games? Because, I mean, you've got Ottavino, Chapman, Kainley. Adding good pitchers should always help. But there comes a point where adding relievers, just there's a marginal utility that you lose.
For those of you who'd like to read more of Joe's insights, I strongly recommend you go to joesheehan.com, subscribe to his email newsletter, which I think is excellent and indispensable. I read it every time it shows up in my inbox. Joe, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having me, Keith. Take care.
Bleacher Tweets.
Okay, Keith, we asked the listeners to send in some Bleacher Tweets for you that are right up your wheelhouse, so I think we've got a good lineup for you today. The first one comes from P.K. Steinberg at P.K. Steinberg. Toronto seems to have great young batting talent, but just traded away their ace in Marcus Stroman. How far away are the Blue Jays from being competitive in the American League and the AL East specifically?
Yeah, I think the latter part is probably the key question, and that they are in such a competitive division. There's three teams clearly ahead of them right now. The Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Rays, none of whom is going anywhere anytime soon. The Yankees and the Red Sox obviously have very strong major league teams and a lot of resources. The Rays don't have those resources, but their farm system remains one of the strongest in baseball. So I think that makes the bar for the Blue Jays to clear quite a bit higher. And also, I think they're kind of lacking pitching in the system. I'm not even just talking about at the major league level. I think part of why the Stroman return felt a little light, not bad, but just maybe lighter than we expected to a lot of people in the industry, not just myself, was it seems like the Blue Jays prioritized pitching, recognizing that other than Nate Pearson, who looks like he could be a top of the rotation starter and should at least be a very good starter, they didn't have a clear, sort of no doubt major league starter anywhere in full season ball. Now they've added one more in Anthony Kay. There's still some hope for Patrick Murphy if he can just stay healthy, which has been his main problem so far in his professional career. They could be putting together a decent major league rotation in the near future. And then we get back to that question, well, is that rotation going to be good enough to get past, say, at least two of those three teams ahead of them? So I'd be more comfortable giving an answer that's further into the future, something in the 3 to 5 year range, because one, that's sort of a best case scenario with pitching. And two, really other than Vlad, Bo Bichette, we'll see about Lourdes Gurriel. He does look like a different hitter this year. That's kind of all there is of their young hitters. Those are the guys I have faith in going forward. The rest of them, I don't know that they're necessarily core building blocks. And so it just raises the bar that we need to have a much better pitching staff, again, to leapfrog two of those three teams and get into a playoff position.
Next question is about another struggling AL team. This comes from Mitchell at Tigers of Detroit. The Erie Seawolves, who are a Tigers affiliate, have an electric AA staff, but how many will end up being rotation mainstays for the Major League club in the future?
Yeah, so the Tigers have hit on a couple of very high first-round picks, including Casey Mize, who they took first overall a year ago. Right now, so Mize and Matt Manning are in that rotation in AA for Erie, and they're both very clear Major League starters. I think Mize has a chance to be a 1. I think Manning has a chance to be a 2. So maybe that is your 1-2 going forward. Those two guys stay healthy. Your hope is, and they just continue on their current development path, your hope is that's your 1-2 going forward. Then they have a bunch of guys who are maybe starters. Tariq Skubal is kind of interesting. He's a lefty who'd been, who'd also had a lot of injuries, but has been absolutely outstanding this year. It's a big league fastball already. There's some hope for him as maybe a mid-rotation type of starter. And then it's guys like Joey Wentz, who they just picked up in a trade from Atlanta, who back-end starter, but maybe still some untapped upside there. Alex Fajardo, for me, is probably a reliever. Logan Shore, maybe a fifth starter, maybe a quality reliever. Alex Lang, who they just picked up in the Castellanos trade, he's almost certainly a reliever for me. So I'd say there's two no-doubt starters. Maybe two more guys who could be starters, certainly. And then a number of guys who are probably fifth, sixth starters, but more likely to impact the team in the bullpen. That said, that's a lot of pitching talent for one minor league team. So this is in no way a criticism. I'm just saying that they're not all going to end up projecting as starters. It's just on the whole, the Tigers may end up filling a half of a big league pitching staff, starters and relievers, just off of this current Erie roster.
Reggie Deal at Baseball Nerd 07 says, Keith, is there a reason for hope for the now highly ranked Marlins system because of guys like Blade, Misner, Chisholm, the Mesa brothers, Diaz, and the two Sanchezes attained from Philly and Tampa?
Yeah, I think so. I think they've made a lot of progress. I think they've traded better. That's probably the biggest thing that they've done is that under the previous ownership, they tended to primarily just trade to save money and then continue to do that in the first set of deals after Derek Jeter's ownership group took over. But then since then have traded far more for prospects, particularly for upside. They've really gone after players they particularly like on sort of specific characteristics that they think give them growth potential or prospects who've maybe lost a little luster, like Chisholm, like Jesus Sanchez, who they got from Tampa, guys who are just kind of not having great years, and maybe the teams are a little more willing to trade them at this point, which is a great strategy, absolutely. Of the guys Reggie listed, I'm a big believer in Blade. I still love Chisholm. He's having a terrible year. You have to acknowledge that. I just think he's very young and probably fairly inexperienced for his age. I really like Eason Diaz. I'm glad to see him finally having the year in a healthy year that I thought he was going to have about two seasons ago. And I think both Sixto Sanchez and Jesus Sanchez have a chance to be very good big leaguers. And I think that right there is a pretty good core just from what they've traded for. Also, the guys he didn't mention, some recent draft picks like Braxton Garrett, especially. Garrett is now back after missing almost two full years to Tommy John surgery. And my understanding is he looks as good as he did in high school when I had him as the third best player in his draft class.
Final tweet this morning comes from Jim Misner at Jim Misner 87. I recently moved back to Boise and found out the local low A team is now a Rockies affiliate. So Jim wants to know, how do minor league teams affiliate with major league teams?
So there are two ways. The simplest way is often major league teams now just own affiliates. That's been a little bit more of a trend where teams buy those affiliates so that they don't have to go through the affiliation dance every 2 or 4 years. And then obviously that just becomes a permanent relationship. Typically, for I think still the majority of minor league teams, there are affiliation agreements that can run 2 years, 4 years, sometimes more. They tend to always be even numbers of years. And it is literally just an agreement that, okay, we're going to work together for this period of time. We, the major league club, will provide you with the players. You, the minor league team, handle your local operations, essentially. And those are – there are more – there are certain minor league teams that are considered more attractive or considered less attractive. Teams would often prefer not to have AAA affiliates in places like, say, Las Vegas or El Paso, Albuquerque, until recently Colorado Springs, because they're extreme hitters environments, not great for your pitchers. Also, often major league teams want to have affiliates that are geographically closer to the major league team, so it's easier to recall players, it's easier to send players there on rehab, it's easier for the front office to go see their own players. And so a lot of clubs, the Phillies, those guys can drive to every one of their affiliates except Clearwater and High A and then the GCL, but that's both of those are their spring training complex too. So all of the Phillies affiliates, I think, are within 2 hours of Philadelphia or at the Philly spring training complex. And so that's a, that's an ideal kind of setup because it just gives you better visibility, better control over getting players back and forth. But you do have to, if you're the major league team, you have to provide good enough players too. A lot of times the teams, minor league clubs will switch affiliation because they're not happy. Like, we've stunk. You haven't sent us good players. You haven't sent us some of your major league guys on rehab because ultimately that's how they make money. They have to have a good product on the field. And if a minor league affiliate feels like they're not getting good enough talent from the major league, their major league affiliate, then they may look to switch the next time the agreement comes up.
Really good tweets this morning. Thank you for bringing some really good ones for Keith. Remember to use the hashtag BleacherTweets moving forward for whoever will be hosting. It's not Buster. Don't know where he is. He's sitting by a lake somewhere. Who knows? Hopefully he's having a great time. Keith, thanks again.
That's all for the Baseball Tonight podcast today. Once again, I'm your host, Keith Law. You can find me on Twitter at Keith Law, on Facebook at Keith Law Writer. I will have a post up at some point in the next 24 hours or so just on some recent minor league scouting that I've done. Also, thank you to my guests, Eric Carabel and Joe Sheehan, for joining me. Tim Kirchen will be guest hosting on Friday, August 9th, while we wait for Buster to come back from vacation. Thanks so much for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.